I'm with Stefan Kreitmeier at the London Knowledge Lab and talking about iPads for education. And I've noticed on the sort of spec that you're one of the few people who's doing a kind of blended use of iPads and sort of face-to-face dynamics. Can you tell us a bit about what you do?
Yeah, my PhD research is in how to design technologies for encouraging collaboration and discussion in large groups. So the idea is, can you build an application that people can play together as a group of 20 or 30 people as you have in the classroom with a teacher there monitoring and facilitating? So kind of an app for multi-user if you want. So it's not just several people, but it's groups within groups so that everybody can sort of engage, but they can collaborate and they can share ideas between each other.
So in a sense, you're talking about it physically in the room, or are you talking about people in several rooms in different at distance?
That would be the next challenge. Now, at the moment, we're thinking about how can you use what a classroom is, which is one expert and many, many novices, and how can you use that as a potential rather than as a problem, you see. Normally in computer lab sessions, the problem is often that there's one teacher and 30 people, and a teacher can only attend one or two at a time, and the others need help constantly. So most of the time you're unsupervised if you work on your own or in pairs. And whereas our approach is finding a way to get everybody engaged at the same time, and also use opportunities for peer teaching. So if you're stuck with something, you have your neighbor just working on the same task, and they might be able to contribute an idea that you need. And
let me ask the question. So how can an iPad give you better affordances than, say, face-to-face, a pen and paper, or I know you use projectors and things. What is it about the iPad that augments that process?
When you say better than face-to-face, that's actually in a way wrong, because we are using face-to-face. We are using the iPad as a face-to-face tool. In a similar way that you can have these massive interactive tabletops, but they are expensive. They're very difficult to lug around, hard to get into a classroom. You know, it's a heavy piece of furniture. It's like a piano. and you can't have 30 people around one. You can have like the table size, you know, 4 or 6 people, that's the limit. So you'd have to have multiple of those, and then it again fragment the group. So that wouldn't really solve the problem.
So you're saying to me there are things on the iPads that are happening in real time, synchronously. That's the thing I'm trying to get over to people.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah, sorry, you should have explained that earlier. So you're in the classroom, you don't give everybody an iPad, but you give, let's say 8 iPads or 4 iPads so people share them in small groups, and all of these iPads are connected to each other. So what one group does potentially affects another group. So there's some information traveling between the iPads and also onto the projection screens. So the idea is that with the iPads you get instant feedback on decisions that you make, and a history of your decisions goes onto the projections. So the short-term local stuff on the iPads and the long-term global stuff on the projection. So as you make decisions using the iPads, your history builds up round after round. And at the end of the game, you have a whole projection screen full of information about your decisions and the outcomes of your decisions. So that's something you can then discuss, and the teacher can also read and discuss with the students, which is different from discussing a group a page from a book, because it's something that they've created themselves based on their own thinking. So it has personal relevance to them, and so it's a very different kind of engagement.
Yeah, I've actually personally used something called Primary Pad with 8 and 9-year-olds, where they're all on computers in the room in groups, plus having a whiteboard. But the Primary Pad is a synchronous writing tool, so it's up in the cloud. So anyone who writes has color-coded writing, and it also keeps a history from the first instance all the way to the end of all the conversations.
Is that version of Etherpad.
It's a version of Etherpad or PiratePad or those ones. So it's a similar thing. You're having something that's happening in face-to-face, synchronously, but it is happening in virtual space and is being annotated and captured in real time, but could be played back and reflected on within that synchronous space as well. So you're getting an iteration happening, a social iteration that may not happen with another tool. That's one of the things that strikes me as being interesting about the social dynamics around the use of the tool in the teaching, which seems to me is innovative.
Yeah, I agree. So just out of interest, how many, do you have 20 people writing on a document at the same time?
I had groups of, I had about 15 writing on a document, but they were set specific tasks and they were working in pairs off computer and then going on, and then they started to engage online and actually move out of that. But everyone could see what was happening at the same time on the screen and on their own screen. So once you'd put up with the sort of fairly immature thing of people writing on other people's scripts, which you would get with young children, and then exploring the medium, you actually moved on to that whole, what I call is a sort of... it's a kind of more fluent space. And I noticed in the report, they talked about seamless learning between home and school, but I think you can have seamless learning in the same space, face-to-face, between people with devices in ways that you could not have done before because it's more explicit.
Yeah, exactly. That's what my research is about. So we're not talking so much about... Well, I'm not focusing on what do people bring into the session and take out, like these pre- and post-test things, but I'm much more into how can you design applications to use the strengths of a classroom. And what actually are these strengths now when we're talking about designing innovative technologies? So these instant feedback from technology is nothing new. You've had that since we had personal computers. But having that as a group is something that's a bit, that's more topical at the moment because you have shareable devices. A mutual comparison is pretty cool. You have... My research uses certain game mechanisms. You have two teams competing against each other.
Yeah, can you tell me a bit more about it, what it's called, and where we can find it?
All right. If you go to the website multiberry.net, it's multi and berry, like raspberry pie, multiberry.net, you'll find on the projects two games. One is called Four Decades, which is a training simulation for climate leaders, that's managers to do with business leaders, and it helps them discuss ways to balance mitigation and adaptation spendings in order to have a sustainable economy by 2050. And the other game is called UniPad, which is for younger people, 16 to 18, thinking about going to university, thinking about living in a shared apartment, and living on a student loan. So that gives them a way of walking through a year in sort of fast forward, making decisions month after month about what do we spend our money on, budgeting. It's a budgeting exercise, but for 20 people at the same time. That's the new thing about it. There are many budgeting tools on websites that you can use on your own. There are mobile phone apps that help you track your spendings as you go. There's a place for that. The game that we've developed doesn't go too much into detail. It lets you decide: do we buy a vacuum cleaner or not this month, or do we go out this month, or do we not go out? So this is like these binary decisions. You know, do we get the smartphone and the laptop?
So can I ask, in terms of the pedagogy, in terms of the teaching, it's knowing how to orchestrate this. The kit and the people and everything, you know, like teaching, but you actually are orchestrating a new way of communicating, facilitated or augmented or afforded by devices, it seems to me.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's this notion of, we can think about the teacher as a facilitator, facilitating learning, And you can also think about the technology as facilitating learning. And so there are two powerful potentials, if that's a word you can pluralize in English, I'm not even sure. In German, you can. And the question is, how do you orchestrate it in such a way that the teacher can do what he's best at and the technology can do what it's best at? And sort of the interplay between personal facilitation and technological facilitation is quite a, there's a huge design space to still explore. So my research has shown a very specific pattern of interaction that uses teams and rounds to structure time and space, that kind of works, right? It's,
and of course you've got the data there in the session captured.
Yes. The findings are positive throughout, and those two games are very successful. Cambridge keeps using for decades, the Cambridge University, for which we've originally developed that, and MyBank keeps using UniPad as in their regular teaching in schools and in community centers with different audiences. So that is, it has relevance in practice. But still, there's a huge, there are still follow-up research questions. Like the two games that we've made, they use simple operations. People just enter numbers or say, this item goes there, this item goes there. Very simple. So things that you can do really with one finger, and it doesn't matter inside a group who presses the buttons. The question is, it's really just the discussion, and you come up with an answer and you type it in, basically. Yeah? It's a different question when it's about modeling or building something or drawing something or being expressive, and then it would really matter. You'd have to, everybody would want to get their finger on the device. And that's something we haven't figured out, how to do something like that with 20 people, or teaching programming in a group of 20 people in the same way that you can just encourage discussion. That's something, those are future steps, for example.
So in some ways, it might suggest certain tools that might be needed in order to do that or built. So rather than the model I'm seeing a lot or hearing about a lot here is that someone having a sort of idea and trying to put it down into an app and then put it out there for users, what seems to me more interesting, for me personally anyway, is the social dynamics around the use of the affordances of the machine, and then how can you build on that once you've put it into the field?
Yeah. I think that's the place to start, the social dynamics that are potentially powerful, and then build something that uses those social dynamics rather than starting with an app as a format, which I think has its benefits, especially for personal users. You know, it's easy to download, it's on your device, and so on. So there's a place for apps, but I'm not sure if an app is really, as a technological, I mean, there are different platforms, of course. The things that I've done, I wouldn't know how to do it on the Apple platform, because the way I've done it is just web technology. So on the iPads or tablets, it's platform independent. You just have a browser running in full screen, so it looks like an app, but it's actually just a website. And the way they are connected with each other, the tablets and the projectors, is through a web server. Very simple, JavaScript, HTML5.
So it's the ubiquity more than actually the system that's important there.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. So the technology is really, you could play this on these kind of games on anything that runs a browser. It's just tablets are, we chose tablets, and they've proven to be, in that sense, better than laptops, for example, because you have the horizontal screen. On a vertical screen, you can't see from the other side, but when it's lying on the table, people can look in from the other side of the table. It's better for sharing in certain ways.
It's always amazes me how education lacks UI, user interface skills. They've been going since the 40s of last century, and yet still not penetrating very much into classrooms or things like that in terms of social dynamics.
There's a point to be made about that, yeah. Well, one reason is that it's difficult to conduct research in classrooms because schools are very protective. It's quite a process to go all through all the ethics approval, and then getting teachers excited is easy. You know, they're usually they know what what could work, and they're curious to try out new things, but then they have to convince the principals, and the principals, and then it's parents, and it's consent forms, and you have to plan very much in advance.
And I think it's one of those issues that's going to come up more and more in terms of a culture, in terms of a culture of pedagogy, a culture of learning. I think what you're doing is, for me anyway, is more interesting because it involves those social dynamics. It's not just throwing something out there and or putting a system in there which you expect people to conform to. What you're doing is more organic in a way. It's finding out how the learning is happening within those social dynamics and then building around it. And for me, that seems a bit more... it has more of an authenticity, having worked in teaching, for me. It's a more authentic feel to it. And I think you probably get more buy-in as well from people doing that, because you're actually getting them so involved in it that but again, your constraints, as you say, are the ethical ones and the research and the institutional ones.
Yeah, that's right. Once you've overcome these hurdles, I notice it now that we've demonstrated sort of a proof of concept, an app that works, two apps that work actually. It's now much easier for people to understand what the point of this is and what the goals are and what the methods are and the little tricks that make it work, really. Because technologically, it's not something complicated. It doesn't require augmented reality and speech recognition and all this high-tech stuff. It's really just simple buttons and numbers and text. And that also makes it easy to author for people. So building these apps is also not very difficult. It's like building a website, a dynamic website, that is. So, sorry, I just lost my thread there.
I think that it's wonderful what you're doing. It's very, very interesting. One last thing is that we mentioned, I remember doing this, a similar sort of thing with 8-9-year-olds, and people coming in from home. At distance, because you've got something like Etherpad. Okay. Yeah. So that, as you said, might be the next stage where you widen the arena, so to speak, socially, culturally, institutionally, maybe.
It would be so much fun to play for decades with one team in London and one team in Bangladesh, for example. You could do that. Technically, it wouldn't be a problem at all, because it's web-based, huh? It's then a question of how you facilitate, because then you have one facilitator here and one facilitator there and two different rooms, and the teams can't see each other. That can be exciting, you know, for games. Restricting information can also be a very an interesting factor that makes people curious. And then you could have them, you would then think about, okay, would you do it, would you use something like video conferencing technology to create some degree of togetherness, or do you just communicate via the data? The game data.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. And can you just remind us, Stefan, what the games are called and where you can find them?
The two games are called Four Decades, like the number four and decades, and Unipad, spelled like an iPad. And they can be found at the website multiberry.net.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.